Welcome to Jet Streaming. What a great name for a podcast on the weather. Jet Streaming is produced by Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Kathy Werzer, resident weather geek in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. And with me, University of Minnesota climatologist Dr. Mark Seely and Minnesota Public Radio meteorologist Craig Edwards, who has spent his career with the National Weather Service in the Twin Cities until retiring last year. Good to have you both with us. How are you?
Good to be here, Kathy. Always like talking about our favorite topic.
Yeah, this really excites me to get the information out about the weather, a high topic of discussion throughout the upper Midwest, particularly in Minnesota.
Well, we had an early spring snowstorm across the plains to the Great Lakes and points east this week, part of a strong system that also brought storms to parts of the south. And as always, we start with some appropriate music.
The clouds started forming, 5 o'clock p.m., funnel clouds touch down 5 miles north of Russellville.
And that's a tune called Tornadoes by the Drive-By Truckers. That's quite a group.
Wow.
By the way, this song has an interesting history. The group wrote it after a tornado whipped through Colbert County, Alabama, on the last night of one of the group's tours back in 1988. We're going to be talking about the recent outbreaks of tornadoes in March, a lot of tornadoes. And we'll also talk to one of the creators of the Enhanced Fujita Scale, which measures the wind strength of tornadoes. And we're going to get to that in just a few minutes. Well, Mark and Craig, let's talk about a noteworthy item this week. Hurricane forecasters now think that the 07 Atlantic hurricane season will be pretty active with 17 named storms, 5 of those storms predicted to be intense or major. And this comes from William Gray's team at Colorado State. What do you two think of that?
Well, quite a contrast, Kathy. 17 named storms is in the forecast for the North Atlantic. We have to remember recent memory here, a record number in 2005, then a very quiet year, relatively speaking, in 2006. And now 17 named storms in 2007 would be a highly active year. I think part of this ties to the transition in the equatorial regions out of El Nino into La Nina conditions. Nevertheless, that will probably be quite disturbing to the people who live in those exposed coastal areas of our country.
Well, yeah, last year, Dr. Gray and the Hurricane Center were also predicting a very high frequency of hurricanes in 2006, coming off the record year in 2005. And that was largely based on the very warm ocean waters in the Gulf of Mexico. And, of course, we learned after the fact that there's more to hurricane productions than just the warm ocean waters. So the prediction last year did not pan out. So we will wait to see what happens this year. But I think it's always good to be prepared for the worst case scenario. And preparations for the hurricane season are a good thing, and I think it's we'll just have to see how that forecast works out.
By the way, for the CSU hurricane forecast, folks might want to head to this website, colostate.edu.
In addition to the other damage, the F2 storm caused a home to collapse.
The service says Thursday's tornado rated an F3, which has winds of 1.
When you listen to newscasts and reports in the days after a tornado has gone through an area, you'll hear the descriptor F2 or F3 or maybe even F4. Starting in February, the National Weather Service is now rating the strength of tornadoes using the Enhanced Fujita Scale, or EF scale. Dr. Jim McDonald is a professor, retired professor at Texas Tech University, former chair of the Department of Civil Engineering, and is one of the co-creators of the EF scale. Dr. McDonald, I'm glad you're with us. Thank you.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Can you explain the Enhanced Fujita scale for us?
The Enhanced Fujita scale came about over a period of time when we realized that there were some limitations and problems with the original Fujita scale, which was developed by Dr. Ted Fujita at the University of Chicago back in 1971. Some of those limitations were that there were not enough damage indicators to help us identify things within the path from which we could estimate the intensity of the tornado. Some of Fujita's damage indicators failed to account for construction quality and variability. And when you got right down to it, there was no real definitive correlation between the damage and wind speeds. The wind speeds in the various categories were based on Dr. Fuchida's intuition, which I have to say wasn't too bad, but there were some places that it could be improved. So there was a need to see if we couldn't either come up with a new scale or improve the old one. And my colleague, Dr. Kishore Mehta, here at Texas Tech, and I decided to take on the project.
Dr. McDonald, Mark Seeley, I have a couple of quick questions for you regarding the derivation of the EF scale. I just wanted to ask, the three-second wind gust is listed associated with those, and I wondered, based on the power spectra of the wind, is a three-second gust truly of sufficient duration to inflict structural damage?
The direct answer to your question is yes, it is of good enough duration. Anywhere from 2 to 10 seconds is considered within that range. More nearly, the reason for the three-second gust is because it matches the standard that we use in our building codes for design.
I see. And, so you're matched up with the industry.
Right. And, of course, if you recall, Fujita used what he called the fastest one-quarter mile wind speed, and that's not too far from a three-second gust when you're talking about very high wind speeds.
Now, across most of the EF categories, the range of wind speeds that would be inferred by the damage assessment appears to be a little bit less in amplitude. That is, shall we say, in the F4 category, formerly we would have had a designation of 261 miles per hour or greater, and now we have a designation of simply stated over 200 miles per hour. Are all the National Weather Service meteorologists who do these storm assessments, are they being retrained mandatorily by this deployment of this EF scale?
Yes, there's been a pretty extensive training program going on for the past year. There are a couple of training features available from the National Weather Service, and all of their people who are involved in tornado investigation are either required or highly urged to take this training. And you're correct. You know, we've brought a lot more engineering into the evaluation than was in Fujita's original plan. And so the meteorologists are having to learn, and that's part of what the training is all about.
I wanted to ask a question about the Weather Service has a dilemma because they're not really staffed to go out promptly and examine the damage from these thunderstorms and tornadoes, and sometimes the arrival is a little bit late and you start having debris cleaned up, and in other situations you just don't have the staff to get to all of these areas, and so we rely on people that have observed these storms and some of the feedback. And I know previously in that big tornado in Oklahoma City a few years ago, the Doppler on wheels was in close proximity. How valuable is a Doppler on wheels to get an estimate of some of these stronger tornadoes?
Well, it's going to become more and more valuable as the years go by, because they're going to improve it, and they're also going to be able to understand better, more clearly, what they're getting and how to interpret it. It's still pretty difficult to get the Doppler and wheels in the right place every time, so we still have to rely on damage, I think, in order to make some estimate of the intensity. But the future looks great for that. I know at Texas Tech we're working on some improvements to the Doppler on wheels and some other things that will help us in getting a more precise measurement as opposed to deducing the wind speeds from indirect methods.
Question here, Doctor. How can an enhanced F scale be determined for a tornado that goes through, say, a farm field or a wooded area?
Well, of course, we need the damage in indicators in order to do that. And if you don't have them, we still have somewhat of a problem. We have included some forest and vegetation in the enhanced scale, but the research to really bring that about is still to be done. Part of the problem is the variables when you start looking, for example, at tree damage. The variability of that is so large. It depends on the type of the tree. It depends on the amount of rain they've had. It depends on the root system and so many different things. But we are working on that. And one of the nice things about the EF scale is we can always add other damage indicators as we do the research or gain the information that we need in order to incorporate it.
Dr. McDonald, it made me think of one additional question when you were talking about, say, rural landscape damage assessment versus urban landscape damage assessment. Embedded in the deployment of the EH scale, is there an inference about the damage inflicted by projectiles? Because, for example, in an urban area, you're going to have a lot more airborne material inflicting damage, more likely, than you are in the rural landscape. Is that kind of inferred in this scale?
We really made a concentrated effort not to include projectiles in the estimate. Fujita, of course, in the original scale had some reference to that. But again, it's the variability and the lack of a correlation of the wind speeds that actually produce those projectiles and the boundary conditions that that are present when the projectile is injected into the wind field that has to be defined much better. So we really don't use, quote, tornado missiles for estimating wind speeds in the EF scale at this point in time.
Oh, okay.
Do you see yourself maybe tweaking the EF scale somewhere along the line, Doctor?
Yes, I think we'll see that happening. In fact, we've already tweaked it a little bit since we first introduced it. There was a concern about the lower end of the F scale and the EF scale, the EF zero. When we developed the correlation between the two, the EF scale lowest wind speed is about 65 miles per hour, where in the Fujita scale it's more like 40 miles per hour. And we sort of opened that up because there are situations where you could have a tornado with very low wind speeds that would be defined as a tornado anyway.
Well, Dr. McDonald, thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Oh, it was fun. And I might mention if people are interested in learning more, a whole lot more about the EF scale, there is a report on the Texas Tech University Wind Science and Engineering website. If you'll just go to wind, W-I-N-D, .ttu.edu, you'll get to our website, and you can click on the EF scale, and there's about an 80-page report there that documents the whole development of the scale and all of the damage indicators and so forth.
That's a great tip, Dr. McDonald. I've been to that website, and I think a lot of people are going to find that report very interesting.
And there are a lot of other things on that website that if you're interested in wind, you'll find very interesting and informative.
Well, it's been very informative talking to you. Thank you, Dr. McDonald.
Thank you. I enjoyed it very much.
Very good. That's Dr. Jim McDonald. He's a retired professor at Texas Tech University and former chair of the Department of Civil Engineering at Texas Tech. He's one of the co-creators of the Enhanced Fujita Scale. You learn a lot listening to Jet Streaming, don't you guys?
You sure do.
Sounds good to me. I'm always open to learning a lot.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to stay on the topic of tornadic activity, gentlemen, and we have a listener question, and it's a good one. What is the difference between a tornado spotter and a tornado chaser?
Well, I'll certainly let Craig amplify on this, but from my experience, the tornado chaser is basically someone willing to travel hundreds of miles to position themselves exposed to a tornado so they can capture it on film, be it still film or video. Now, there's a subset of tornado chasers that I think actually have contributed to NOAA's knowledge about tornadoes, and those are the ones that chase these storms in with instrumented vehicles. And they may try to capture the character of these storms, size, speed, maybe visual character, vertical distribution, a whole variety of features of the storm. And I know that some of this has been used, for example, for case studies for the NOAA meteorologists to study these. So it's not to poo-poo the whole range of chasers we have out there, but I think there are a number, perhaps the vast majority, that are out there willing to travel hundreds of miles and try to capture visible images. A spotter, on the other hand, in my view, is a public servant because they're trained by the National Weather Service. They're deployed to cover a specific geographic area, and their information is coordinated by the National Weather Service to better delineate and put out weather warnings to the public. So in my view, Craig, that's a kind of a broad-scale delineation of the two, but do you have other opinions about it?
Well, I think that sums it up. What we see with storm chasing is a segment of storm chasing that got started mainly through the research groups down in Texas and Oklahoma that had funding to do mobile type of surveys and follow these storms. And then it's grown in the last 10 years to just pretty much amateur type people with a great passion for capturing tornadoes on video. I think you can even get on tornado storm chasing type of tours where you can actually sign up and you can pay to have them take you through the thrill of chasing a tornado, which is something I just don't have a passion for.
You know, listening to you here, you know, as a meteorologist and Mark as a climatologist, you both use, as you say, there's valuable information from some of these individuals, but the tours, the storm tours are just growing by leaps and bounds, but I'm sensing you two are just not that excited about it.
It might be a generational thing, too. Kathy, Craig and I are both of the same generation, and maybe we give a top priority to safety, but I can think of a lot more ways to spend my entertainment or recreational dollar than going on a storm chase. There are a lot more, I guess, attractive to other people, and especially people who come to the United States from other countries that don't have the type of climate that delivers these storms. And so maybe once in a lifetime they'd like to be able to see one of these storms, because obviously in their home country they're never going to experience such.
Craig, your question, you know, all the experience you've had with the National Weather Service, and you try hard to get the warnings out to people, and Mark has a point here. If you have tours and you have people doing sightseeing, in a sense, does that just kind of dampen down the need, or I should say the importance of some of the warnings, if you had people going out just gawking?
Well, what happens, Kathy, is you get clusters of people converging in an area where the tornado is likely to occur, and then you get a traffic jam perhaps going on. And I really am concerned about the safety of people. And the National Weather Service has always put at the forefront keeping people safe, and that includes observing severe weather. So there is not a strong encouragement of people to chase storms. However, we did value the information they would be providing us if they were able to communicate that information to us. Quite often, they were doing exclusive coverage for a TV station, and so you had competition of people chasing storms trying to get video so it could be seen on the 10 o'clock news. Now, with reality TV, I'm really concerned that we're taking this to another level, that we won't be happy or we won't reach the greatest thrill until we actually have somebody capturing video and then suffering some severe injury from that. I hope that doesn't happen. I think we got to have some common sense about chasing severe weather. And for the most part, we've been very good about keeping people safe. But you have maybe a little bit of reckless abandon out there just to get the most exclusive video. So that's one of the things that concerns me. Another thing that concerns me is the timely information that's relayed to the National Weather Service from the field. These people observing these things, and then the National Weather Service not receiving the information till perhaps they see a video on the 10 o'clock news. And that's what I've seen in the past, that sometimes a tornado has occurred and the National Weather Service wasn't communicated that information, and it had a trickle down through the media. And the National Weather Service is most valuable when we can relay information in a timely manner.
I want you to know, many of us regular old citizens, Craig, support your view on that.
Now, if you happen to have an opposing view, you can always go to minnesotapublicradio.org and go to the Morning Edition homepage and leave a comment or a question about what you just heard here on the Jet Streaming podcast. Well, before we go here, we're making this a weekly event. We try to present the very best information for folks, so we try to pick a weather or climatology-related website that you devoted weather geeks think is terrific. And Craig, you get to go this week.
Well, Kathy, there's a great website. We just talked about storm chasing. The College of DuPage has information on their website about storm chasing. It's a great website for amateur meteorologists, retired meteorologists. It has radar imagery analysis. It has forecast model information. So it's a great website, real easy website to remember. It's weather.cod, which is College of DuPage.edu. And they're out of Northern Illinois. They got a great website. Highly recommend it.
All right. We'll add that to the list. Well, you two have a good week, and we'll talk to you again next week, okay?
All right, Kathy.
Thanks, Kathy. So long for now.
All right. That's Craig Edwards. Craig is one of our meteorologists here at Minnesota Public Radio. Dr. Mark Seeley, climatology professor at the University of Minnesota. You also hear him on Minnesota Public Radio. And that's going to do it for Jet Streaming. Thank you for listening. We appreciate it. If you have a comment or a question, our home is at minnesotapublicradio.org. Head to the Morning Edition homepage and find our link on the right-hand side of the screen. Thanks again.